Hi there, welcome to the neighborhood. Climate Neighbors is the English version of the German original Die Klimanachbarn. On this channel, we'll have the English podcasts available in full length. Now, in this episode, we got to meet Lila Connors. Lila is a film director and well known in the climate documentary area, but has a new movie which came out in 2024 called Legion 44. She will tell us how her way led from working with people like Mikhail Gorbachev and Leonardo DiCaprio to this project. So sit back and relax, headphones on, stereo on, here are the Climate Neighbors. Today is November 26, 2024. Global average temperatures are 1.2 degrees higher than before the industrial era. Yesterday, 73% of Germany's electricity demand was met by renewable energy sources. That's 16 in the US. 7% of Germany's land area is affected by drought. That's 38 for the US. And the sea level has risen by 25 centimeters since 1880, which affects all of us. Here's a new fact. This is our first English podcast, and I can welcome Lila here in our podcast today.
Thank you for having me, and I'm very happy to be the first one.
First question, how are you?
I'm good. I'm awake and ready to talk.
How was your trip? Where do you come from, first of all, for your listeners, and why are you here in Nuremberg exactly?
Well, I live in upstate New York in the woods. We are a pandemic move, so I'm originally from Los Angeles. And, felt like we wanted to have more space, more freedom. So we live in so it's about 2 hours north of New York, 2 hours west of Boston. So we can still go into the city, but we aren't really in the woods with bears and foxes and bald eagles and turkeys and, you know, that sort of quintessential American, you know, vibe, I guess you would say. And I'm here in Nuremberg for our premiere, thanks to Dirk Pessler, who has put on an amazing event. I can't wait with Anna and Ralf also from Carbon Drawdown Initiative. And it should be quite an event. It's a big screen and we shot the movie to be screened on these huge screens. So I'm excited. It's going to be the biggest projection yet of our movie.
And I'm very honored to be part of that premiere. And I'm really excited. That's one thing we share is a common interest in making movies. I mean, I'm not on the scale as you do it, but we share the same passion about that. Coming from the US into Germany, are there some differences you already recognize? I mean, you're half German, you told me, right?
I'm part German. My mother's a quarter, I'm a quarter. She's half-half and my dad's American. But yeah, I spent a lot of time in Germany starting in the 70s. We're from Berlin and half of our family was stuck in East Berlin. So I would go through Checkpoint Charlie as a child. And so, I went to Berkeley university. And then I went to Paris, actually. So I lived in Paris for many years and spent a lot of time in Germany when I was in Paris because I have an affinity for the country. I love Germany. I think it's a wonderful place. And although I've never been to Nuremberg, spent a lot of time in Munich.
How do you like it so far?
I think it's beautiful. What a medieval, beautiful place. I mean, so we're just starting to explore it yesterday. And the Christmas Mart, we're missing the Chris Kindles Mart by 2 days, which is a bummer. But, you know, we had some glue wine yesterday.
There you go. Those are already open, those stands. Coming from the US, how have you met the climate crisis issue? Like, when did you get into the...
Sure. I mean, mine is different than most because I was introduced to it before climate was a thing, really. I used to work with Mikhail Gorbachev. And
the Russian former president
of the Soviet Union. Yeah, it sounds weird. But my former husband, and we're still very good friends, Matt Peterson, ran Global Green USA, which was a part of the Green Cross, which was Mikhail Gorbachev's initiative when he said, basically, when the Soviet Union collapsed, he said the next big thing after nuclear disarmament, which now, of course, we have another issue. But anyway, that's for another day. Mm-hmm. I made a movie about that, by the way, called The Arrow of Time with Gorbachev. But the climate crisis. And when he said that, it was literally in the early 90s. So, I mean, obviously people knew about it prior to that, but it wasn't really, environmental consciousness was not in the international political dialogue at all. Gro Harlem Brundtland was one of the first heads of state to talk about it. Gorbachev was one of the first heads of state to talk about environment in general. He said we needed a green helmets at the first Rio.
Coming from Russia, it was pretty interesting. I
mean. Yes, he was the first person to recognize that, and he had a very holistic view of the world in terms of the environment, that it really was something that we needed to be a global caretaking activity, one that would actually unite the world. And so what was fascinating was, is that climate as sort of the carbon PPM and all that, even though it was being measured by scientists, wasn't in the dialogue at the time, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, I became aware of this global environmental consciousness and global leaders in the early 90s. And so started to follow it. And then it started to be framed as a carbon question. Mm-hmm. So basically from the beginning prior. So I've been part of sort of talking about climate ever since then.
In all of your movies also?
My first film was with Leonardo DiCaprio called The 11th Hour. And he and I were both had read a book called The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight by Tom Hartman. And that was basically this whole view of civilization using energy coming from the sun, obviously. So prior to the discovery of fossil fuels, we lived on what we call current sunlight.
Yeah.
So anything that happened in the year happened because the sun landed on the fields, the animals ate the plants, you eat the animals move you around, that's what was going on. And then we invented steam, and then the Industrial Revolution happened, then we found coal and oil, so we started using what we call ancient sunlight. So energy stored was created by the sun, but then was sequestered away for hundreds of millions of years, which is really exciting because that's what kind of, I've come full circle with Lithium 44. So, because basically we're restoring what we call those deep carbon pools.
We took it out, now we have to get it back.
Yeah, basically. It's very simple. Really simple. Now, and even whether you believe in climate or not, or think that, I think it's not so much if you believe in it, but it's more, do you want to use it as a mechanism for political control or laws or regulations, right?
Yeah.
So that's really, I think, where it is at. But basically, yeah, we took the ancient sunlight, we put it up in the sky, and we need to put it back. So that's basically was my first movie, was really talking about that. It was really saying, oh my gosh, we didn't know we could put it back at the time. It was like 2002, 2003, 2004 in there. But I learned about CDR in 2002, carbon dioxide. Already. Leo and I came across a guy named Klaus Lackner, German man who was living, also in Arizona at the time. I'm not sure if he was there yet, but he had come up with this idea of the mechanical tree that could pull carbon out of the sky. So
that was the start.
That was 2002, but it was conceptual.
Yeah.
So it always stuck in the back of my mind. I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. Like we can actually reverse what we've done.
Now we're already in it. I mean.
Right. And what we've already, we all knew that trees were doing it and the ocean was doing it and wetlands and blue carbon and all of that. We all knew that already for a long time. So we've been in this for a long time.
Yeah.
It's just that bringing some of these to the general culture in terms of, it takes a while. And that's why we make the movies that we do.
Great. Speaking of those movies, first of all, how did you get into making those movies? What was the first interest? I mean, you talked about Gorbachev and meeting Leo, or was it?
It was mostly Leo, actually, because we were a Tree Media, my company. We founded in 1996, and basically, our idea was to use the internet to bring interesting ideas forward. Mm-hmm. The thing about it in 1996, if anyone remembers what the internet was like then, you couldn't put video on the internet. You could barely put a picture on the internet.
Well, I was 5 years old.
Right. So at the time, it was all text. We actually did one of the first forums to free a Chinese dissident then named Wei Jingcheng. We've done a lot of firsts on the internet. We even hacked Flash to do film. Yeah. Actually, we're the first people to put film on the internet with David Lynch. But we're so creative in the sense that we never what we call shrunk wrap any of the tech we invented, which maybe I should have, would have a lot more money than being an independent filmmaker. But anyway, so we, in software, we wrote a lot of our own code. We wrote a lot. We actually did one of the first Facebook ideas before Facebook, which was have people create profiles on the internet mm-hmm. and explain what kind of environmental action they were doing and then share it with other people, share their profiles. We built it on Linux and it had like 100,000 people from around the world. Right. And it was early. This was like 2004, I think. That programming is ancient. But we've been experimenting with, you know, impact and storytelling for a long time. But anyway, Leo came along and wanted to talk about this ancient sunlight question back in 2003, 4, and 5. And that's when we did our first movie. In fact, 11th Hour was meant for the internet, actually, because mm-hmm. we were doing this hacking flash and putting stuff on the internet. And we interviewed about 70 people because we want to understand the state of the world at the time. And all of a sudden, it just started becoming a film. And then we actually went from digital to film. It ended up being 35 millimeter, which if, for those of you interested in film is kind of crazy to go from digital to 35, but that's what happened in the day. I could go on about that movie. It was really interesting. But anyway, it ended up being a movie that did move the needle all over the world. We ended up activating whole countries, creating laws around the world to protect forests. And it had a really strong impact, that movie.
That'll be my question. What is the outcome of such huge projects? You told me 70 interviews. What is the outcome for you personally? Like, how did you move on? Like, being activists or also politically? How did it start with movies like with what you did with Leo and all the others, including Legion 44 coming up right now?
So it's mostly around theory of change. So mm-hmm. my background is actually in international politics and economics. And so, and I was in think tanks for a while. And I was just fascinated by understanding that people actually know what to do. Mm-hmm. You know, we know what to do. We know how to make the world an amazing place. And I'm somewhat of a naive utopian kind of thinker, maybe less so now that I'm older. But I really believe that humans wanted to create a world that we all wanted to live in. I always believe that deep down, most everyone is working in that direction. And I, in my think tank, I did meet ex-heads of state. It was called the Center for the Study of Democratic Institutions. It had a journal called New Perspectives Quarterly, and it was global. And I met a lot of ex-leaders from around the world mm-hmm. who had really incredible ideas about how to make the world work, including like Gorbachev when he was no longer president. And he was saying like, let's do the environment. Let's have one sort of agreement around how to live on this world, you know, in peaceful, you know. But what I was seeing in the news was the opposite of what I was seeing behind the curtain, right?
Yeah.
And I thought, what is that all about? What's going on with the news? They're making everything terrible. It sounds like everyone hates each other and there's no solutions and it's all this fear and all this hopeless and all that. So I said, I'm going to found a company that talks about the hope and the plans and all that. And I was very, you know, I had no idea that that's where the main battle is waged.
Yeah.
Even then, I understood the idea of memes, counter memes, propaganda and all that. What I didn't understand is how bad it was, how bad the actual seizure of mainstream media is by agendas that don't want the world to be a place we all want to live in.
To profit from
the crisis or whatever it is. Yeah. I had no idea that that was my cohort. I just thought that if you put out an effective message, argument, that everyone would be like, yay, let's fix it. So anyway, long story short, it didn't matter. We always had independent financing, except for Ice on Fire, actually was funded by HBO. But we always had independent financiers to give us the freedom to say what we wanted, mm-hmm. right? And so this is my sixth, we've done big ones, right? Mm-hmm. And they each take about 2 to 3 years. This one I made in a year, which is kind of crazy in terms of from first frame to edit to final product. Of course, there's development in the front and now we're in posts, you know, like in distribution sort of between like, you know, the premieres and the festivals and the distribution. But It was a really fast movie. And the reason why Legion happened was because we actually did Ice on Fire, and we started talking about Carbon Room because we knew about it from way back in 2002. And when I was doing Ice on Fire for HBO, again with Leonardo, we were talking about methane and all that. And I said, well, really, you know, that methane pulse is really scary. We really have to, let's revisit drawdown, what we called at the time drawdown, like pulling it out of the sky through plants. And then all of a sudden I was on Facebook and I saw a picture of the Climeworks machine in Himmel, Switzerland. And I said, oh my God, there's the mechanical machine. I can't believe it. So we raced over there. We're the first people, met Christoph and Jan, and we started talking about CDR, like engineered removals. And that was a thrilling moment because I thought, oh my God, we finally arrived. It took 20 years, you know, but now but here we are.
We have
here
a product.
It is. And it's scale. Well, it's not at scale globally, but it was at scale from a, you know, a little box in a lab, right? It was out in the world. I'll say from a little box in the lab. So anyway, so that's so that was cooking in our mind. So we made Ice on Fire and had that in there. So Ice had direct air capture, and then we went and did Seaweed with Green Wave in Connecticut. And then we did Biochar in Northern California. They were charring like invasive species in the redwood forest and then plants. They were doing afforestation and removals with Biochar.
So and win-win.
A win, triple win, because those are really old trees and they don't burn down generally. They're fire resistant. And then we had, what was it, DAC, biochar trees, seaweed. Yeah, we had all of those in Ice. And so we went to Cannes, and then we had our premiere in LA, like 2019 fall. Then what happens? The pandemic.
Well, pandemic, yeah.
Yeah. Normally, it takes 18 months for an impact movie to have an impact. And what we generally do is what we're doing now. We do interviews, we do press, we do festivals, we do VIP screenings, and then it goes out. We have like impact websites and now socials, like depending on where we are in time. Like I started way back, like I told you, in 2000 or whatever, to doing our own Linux, like profile thing, hacking, Flash and all that. Now there's so many tools. Like every time I do an impact movie, I look at the tool set of the day and say, okay, what tools do we have right now?
Yeah.
And right now it's definitely podcasts. It's definitely like Substacks. It's, you know, LinkedIn, it's X now, you know, all this, you know, all the socials. So we're going to do a huge thing with that. We haven't yet started. We have a little bit going, but probably starting in February, we're going to go do that. And we're going to have like an online premiere, which will be really interesting.
When can we watch it?
Where? When can you watch?
When?
We're starting to do, we're starting to do a rental gift.
Okay.
The film as a gift, as a single stream rental with carbon removal for the holidays, which I think is cool.
Yeah.
And we're going to do that as a private placement for people that are in the know. And then probably somewhere between January and March, we'll go live for the world, like open. But people want to see it right away. And I'm really struggling with, do we go old school, which we definitely won't because it's too slow, or new school entirely and do none of the old school? So we're in the middle of like talking to different studios. Some are interested. Some are kind of interested in our creative ways of distributing the movie. But anyway, back to Legion. So Legion came when we were coming out of the pandemic, and Paulina and Fabian were students that wanted to talk about CDR in the form of a movie.
Yeah.
And they won some contest at some school thing. And the people said, you got to find someone that knows how to make a movie. So they called and I said, well, that's really interesting because we've been following this for a really long time.
Yeah.
And so I decided to mentor them to help them understand how to do this. So that's how that started. That's how Legion began.
Great.
Yeah.
Doing all of those movies, how was the influence in, or how was the aftermath after such a movie? It came out, people watched it. How were the connections after that politically?
Huge. Or, like,
do you have some examples like who did you meet and how?
I mean, it depends on the movie, right?
Yeah.
And and also you don't know. I actually want to found a think tank just to talk about impact media because some people love to talk about impact media, and I'd love to hear what they actually have done. Like, so we've done it for so long that we actually have anecdotal evidence, but it's not data driven, mm-hmm. right? No one's doing data because it's almost, I think, impossible, but maybe not now with AI, because you can scan the whole thing and see what words are used differently. Like, for example, keep it in the ground, that hashtag, we came up with mm-hmm. that hashtag for the Green World Rising series that we did with Leo. Okay, so hashtag keep it in the ground. We started that hashtag. Right now we're doing the Legion is Rising. That's probably not going to take off because it's specific to us.
Yeah.
But we've come up with some sort of concepts, like Know Your Farmer. We did an urban farming movie that was very, very successful and called Urban Roots. And like, for example, it was all about Detroit and how Detroit collapsed and how we had all these vacant lots and everyone started farming.
Yeah.
Right. And now people are rediscovering that now, but we made that movie back in 2011. And
so the aftermath is.
The aftermath is like decades. Yeah. I mean, I was actually 10 years later at a meeting in Oxford in London, outside in London with people from Oxford and Cambridge and people from the Middle East, because there was a COP in Qatar. And I was actually helping advise them on the COP. And there were these imams that were sitting there and they look across and they say, thank you for Urban Roots. Uh-huh. And I was like, wow. Like, and they said, because of Urban Roots, we fed our community with the garden we created.
Oh, cool.
So, I mean, for example, there another one is the 11th Hour played in front of the Canadian Parliament, apparently. Mm-hmm. The night before, or there was a big premiere, kind of like the one we're doing tonight in Nuremberg.
Yeah.
The night before, the Canadian Parliament was voting on protecting maybe a giant tract of the British Columbian rainforest. And because of the movie, I was given a note from the Parliament said, thank you, we passed the law, and we were able to protect a giant swath of the planet, because they say it takes 4 hours on a 747 to fly over this forest. And inside that forest is a special bear. That's a white bear, but it's actually a brown bear. So mm-hmm. it's a very special bear. So they sent me a picture that said, thank you for saving this bear.
Cool.
So there's a lot of sort of knock-on effects that you can't predict, but it's like planting seeds. It's like planting seeds in a garden and then
you don't know
what's going to grow.
Yeah.
But it comes back at me. One last story was I was filming after a horrible fire in Santa Rosa and I met a Northern Californian foundation person. And she said, because of also the 11th hour, most of the foundations in Northern California moved towards climate, mm-hmm. which, and that's a very powerful group of foundations. So anyway, you know, it does work. I think it's not me, obviously, it's storytelling in general, like mm-hmm. any stories. It's the battle for the story right now, right? Yeah. We are in a battle for what is the story and what are the stories we're telling ourselves in order to create this world that we can all live in, right? Yeah. And
it's great to have people like you joining this battle. I mean, welcome to the Climate Neighbors. We tried to do that too. After seeing so many beautiful and also ugly sites, what is the most impressive one you saw or experienced, or the most beautiful thing you saw doing all of those movies?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the most beautiful thing, honestly, is the human heart in the sense. Like, most... Again, like there are some people that don't want things to work out well, but I think those are the minority. I think wherever you go in the world, there are people doing amazing things and everyone's really trying. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm trying to put in the movie. Like Legion really shows that, really shows the efforting of people to try. And Ice and Fire does the same on really how to make this work, you know, and the goodness in people. That's the most beautiful thing that I've been able to experience. And again, like these, whatever it is, and I don't want to call it the theys or whatever, there are just competing interests that are trying to maximize their gain mm-hmm. at the expense of others. And so it is really a bit of a battle of good and evil, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And I don't fall anymore. I've kind of grown in my view of even climate in terms of what I'm seeing now, which I don't like in the climate movement, is condemnation of other people. of these hyper weird regulations that I think are very bad. Like we have this rule in New York that, you know, you're not allowed to have gas stoves, mm-hmm. and you're not allowed to do this. You know, they're starting to clamp down and on people's freedoms. Yeah. And I don't like, and I don't think at all that we should use the climate crisis to suppress people yeah. or to make these overbearing laws. What we need to do is innovate, not regulate. Yeah. That's my other, maybe my new hashtag, innovate, don't regulate. Yeah. Because it really bothers me to see like these very well-meaning sort of, we're going to fix it and we're going to make these rules and we're going to force people to do X, Y, and Z. Yeah. And without really, in New York anyway, maybe Germany's different, but in New York, they don't tell you how you're going to get your induction stove. Half the people can't afford an induction stove. They have to get all new pans. And so I'm like, how can you ban something without giving another opportunity? Mm-hmm. It's punitive and it's not giving the pathway.
Yeah.
Can we please do this by inspiration and innovation? That's what I want. And don't use the climate crisis cynically to get what you want now.
Yeah.
And I see that
use
now.
The crisis again.
Yes. Like your problem. So now I'm seeing the fear base coming from the do-gooders now are yeah. using the climate crisis to get what they want. And now everyone rightfully is pushing back on climate, saying, oh, they want to overregulate and all like COVID regulations. And now everyone's really pissed. And now I'm like, that's the most cynical thing you can do is take a real issue, use it to your own ends. Now everyone hates it even more. And so I'm like, oh my God.
So the classic revolution story, like after yeah. that, the dictator comes yeah. out of the revolution.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm very concerned about that with climate, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have an... Well, I'd call it, speaking of evil experiences, did you have an ugly one, which was like kind of depressing you? You talk about the motivation and you get a lot of energy out of that, right?
Yeah.
But was there one that really got to your...
Oh yeah.
Got on your nerves?
Honestly, the hardest thing has been watching the manipulation of sort of, and I'm not going to name names, but like of certain entities, let's say, to not promote the movie in the right way, to suppress it. Honestly, it's mostly suppression.
Yeah.
For me, it's been a lot of suppression. Like, just don't, you know, put me the movie or the project on like the white glove social boosting, you know, like more like just push it down, you know. And for different reasons, like I found that the environmental community, the sort of the established ones in the United States, really didn't want to talk about methane at all. And because
is there a reason?
I don't really know. I got in a fight with the New York Times, actually. I will name names on that one, around where they were insisting there was no such event of massive plumes of methane bubbles bubbling up to the surface of the ocean. And at the time, and this was before everyone knew about it, but I said, we have video from Russia,
yeah.
from the East Siberian Sea, where there's definitely bubbles coming from hitting the surface. They're like, no, that's just impossible. And they wouldn't run or cooperate on talking about this one project I did called Last Hours, which indeed was a bit, it was a fear-mongering thing it wasn't a fear-mongering, but it was reality. It was actually comparing the ejection of carbon, the yeah. rate, to the Permian mass extinction and the five previous extinction events, all included massive ejections of carbon into the atmosphere for obviously from different things. Yeah. Some people think it was, you know, the Siberian traps, or some people think were shallow lakes, and whatever it was an ejection of carbon, which changes the chemistry of the atmosphere and then causes life to collapse and start over again. And the actual rate at which we're ejecting carbon into the atmosphere is in orders of magnitude greater than the Permian mass extinction. So we talked about that, and the New York Times didn't like that at all. So they didn't really talk about it. There was a back channel suppression going on. And then later we were validated by events. Sadly, I didn't wish we were, but it's actually now common to talk about it. But at the mm-hmm. time it wasn't. So, you know, those were to me, the hardest part about my job has been doing things that don't sync with the powers that be, either on the opposing side or even on our side.
Yeah.
Well, they just don't want to talk about that right now. We're supposed to only talk about this, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And at this point, I love the word that we're starting to use in the States. I don't know if it's here, called paleo environmentalists. Because there's a lot of people that in especially New York State where I live now, where they don't like CDR. They want to ban biochar. They want to ban direct air capture. So we're starting to call them paleo environmentalists because they see
the reason
for banning biochar is all around permission to pollute. So they don't like biochar because they worry that it's going to cause the plastic industry to continue to produce more plastic because they can pyrolyze the waste of plastic. Mm-hmm. And obviously with direct air, they don't want renewable energy to go to removals. They want it to go to energy, which I understand the argument, but no one's saying we're going to do direct air capture in New York City.
Yeah.
We're saying we're going to do it in Iceland and Kenya. So, you know, and maybe you can find some geothermal or you can find some heat offtake that you can run a DAC machine on, you know? So
how do you get back on track? Like what motivates you to keep on going and doing one?
I mean, it's not something that I have to motivate myself to do. This is just who I am. I'm just fascinated by, again, what makes the world work. I've always been fascinated by that as a child. I've always looked at the world holistically. Why that is, I have no idea. Maybe because I have international parent, you know, I've traveled ever since a child. There's a lot of reasons, but I mean, we all have our own biography to live out. And that's just, I'm just fascinated by what works. And also I'm fascinated by war and peace too, right? Like, again, like Gorbachev said, you know, we've got nuclear weapons and we have the environment. These are two things that are civilizational threat level events, you know, and then pandemics, but not so much. I think we can handle those, but like, it's mostly those two things. And so I've been fascinated by, you know, how to, you know, not, you know, collapse based on those things. What do you do as a civilization?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not really motivating. It's just my setting. That's what I do.
You can't do anything against it.
No.
Just keep on going.
I actually recently asked, like, is there anything else I could be doing? No. That's what I do for a living.
Now you worked a lot of time starting in 1990 with those movies. Who was the president then? Back then? 1990?
Was it Clinton? I forgot. Gosh. Probably. I think it was Clinton. When I graduated college, I left during the Reagan 80s. Mm-hmm. So I think Clinton came in after Reagan in the 90s. The 90s were weird now. Now that you look back at the 90s, and I mean, I'm not, you know, yeah, it wasn't good.
Yeah.
You know, the whole post-Cold War era has not gone the way I think it should have gone. And I have lots of comments. I made a movie, The Arrow of Time, about that. Yeah. I think we wasted a lot of opportunities to make solid peace for the long term because, you know, yeah. Well, but I get in trouble for that. So we could move on to the environment. That's not my lane. I'm not allowed to talk about this.
I know. my question is more, starting with, let's say, Clinton, and now in the future, it will be Trump again.
Yeah.
How did the political landscape change the whole climate thing? I know that Trump isn't a huge believer in climate change.
You know, this is a hard conversation to have because it's not what everyone thinks, honestly. It is and it isn't, and it's very specific to location. So, for example, Texas has a lot of wind.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't think that. You would think it would be California, New York. That's, you know, California does have solar. Texas has tons of wind. A lot of the biochar projects that are going in sort of Republican states. Mm-hmm. So as far as I'm concerned now, if it is innovative, makes jobs, has a sort of trajectory in terms of the economy and making money, you know, I think it doesn't matter what side of the political aisle you're on.
Yeah.
You'll do it. Because renewable energy in many cases is cheaper than fossil fuels. Fossil fuels also, there is going to be peak oil and there is going to be peak fossil fuels.
Of course, yeah.
So, you know, it's just innovation. And Elon Musk obviously is in Trump's inner circle. Mm-hmm. And he obviously knows that he's on record saying that's why he invented the electric car. I mean, it's just innovation now.
Yeah.
And that's how I want to look at it. I want to depoliticize the environment, the climate, just get it out of politics because both sides are using it as weapons and it's not okay. I mean, we should just really focus on like I say, innovation and all of the exciting things that come with these new technologies. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. And also the nature tech, you know, like how to work with nature and biomimicry. I'm really into biomimicry, which is fascinating. So, you know, that's how I see it. So in the Trump world, I have no idea, but I do think that if it has an economic benefit, they will obviously look at it. That's mm-hmm. how I see it. I could be wrong. Plus, they have RFK, for goodness sake. He's Riverkeeper. Hello.
Well, in the whole span of more than 25 years now, how do you look into the future? Is it optimistic? You see a lot of solutions. You see a lot of also problems going around the world. How is your look on the future?
Yeah, I'm going to rip off Paul Hawken, who I know. He'll say, if you look at the data, you get depressed. If you look at the human heart, you definitely know it's going to be okay. I love that quote because yes. It's true. I've seen it firsthand. I know that people have it figured out. I've seen it ever since when I said at the beginning when I worked in my think tank. I know that people know what to do. I know that we know what to do. We know how to fix pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. It's just this layer of individuals and entities, I don't know who they are, that don't want this. And I ask everyone to figure it out. I don't know the answer. Mm-hmm. And I just know that I've obviously come up to the edges of these people who have pushed back. And so I'm optimistic because I think there's more of us than them. But they're fighting hard, man.
Active ones. Like those, yeah, those I mean, there's, are mostly not,
there's
like,
much more of the of I think the love in the world, to be honest. Yeah. I think that we're in for tough times ahead because some of these forces that are not up for peace and unity are active right mm-hmm. now. But I think if we all calm down and we really, again, innovate and really work on fixing things where we live, also just make your own life good, mm-hmm. then that ripples out. You know, and so that's why I'm hopeful, because that's the only path. And that's what I'm focusing on pretty much every day.
Doing Legion 44 now, you said before coming full circle. I mean, speaking of hope for the future, that is the perfect movie for that. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you're going to. I'm going to. I think you're going to like it.
again, in this movie, what is the most impressive thing you've met, well, technology wise mm-hmm. or also people wise, but also, was there a shocking thing, like, are we already there? So,
well, I think for most people that haven't heard about CDR at all, they're gonna, Legion's shocking. And I think it's funny because some of the people that cry the most at the end are the bankers. mm-hmm. It's people that are in finance or in these larger entities that they've been trying to sort of green or whatever. And now they're seeing something that, oh my God, not only is it working, but it can be at scale. And actually it's way further than they thought. And it's actually where they can put money in. And that relieves them, because I think, you know, that just the constraints of certain organizations or institutions just didn't let them do the right thing. Right. So this is for the first time ever, I think, allowing, you know, billions of dollars to be deployed to rebalance the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And it basically all it is we're taking what we call the ancient sunlight, the ancient carbon, from the sky and put it back in long-term storage. We're not just cycling it in the nature, because that's like 100 up, 100 down gigatons every year. Mm-hmm. And that's...
It's gone.
This is what we call additional removals that would have never happened unless a human showed up and did it.
Yeah.
And we're putting it deep in the earth for over 1,000 years.
Fixing our...
1,000 years or more, right? That is new. That conceptualization's new. And that's when someone watches Legion, you're going in, not ever hearing about it and ending up going, oh my God, not only can we do that, but there's tons of different ways, different places in the world. It's very globally diverse, which I love. That part was amazing. And the other thing about carbon dioxide removal is that carbon obviously is the stuff of life. And so you can make stuff with it. So not only can you just remove it altogether, but you can what we call defossilize products. Mm-hmm. So basically fuels can be recycled. So you can take it. There's a company called Aircella where with solar, they can pull it out of the sky and make fuel in your your garage. So there's going to be no more gas stations. There's going to be no more. There's another dimensional energy that can make for $2.50 diesel from solar to diesel.
So we can still keep our cars.
You can still keep the, and that's what some paleo environmentalists would say, that's terrible. Like, we don't want any cars on fossil fuels at all. And that's up for everyone to debate what's right or wrong, but
I think personally
way better than digging it up and burning it. So you might as well, if you can recycle it, let's do that. There's also this big argument about capturing the emissions. You know, they say, no, you know, that's a permission to pollute too. Don't let the fossil fuel companies capture their emissions because they're going to use it to make more fuels. Wouldn't it be better to capture the emissions, which are super concentrated and it's not hard, it's right there, than let it go up in the sky and then we have to
re-catch it again?
Re-catch it. That's why it's called 400 parts per million.
Yeah.
That's 400 orange ping pong balls in a million white ping pong balls. You have to find the 400. I mean, what would you rather do, you know, when it's 99 like parts per million?
Stop it right at the door.
Exactly. So these are the debates we're having. But I think when you see Legion 44, you'll come out thinking a lot of thoughts about probably how you want to get involved. Because I've seen it.
It's more encouraging or more alarming?
Extremely encouraging.
Get on train.
No, it's not alarming because there's really, I think we're alarmed enough.
Yeah.
And I think any more alarm is, and I, like I said, I did one of the most alarming pieces on this called Last Hours back in 2014. Mm-hmm. So I'm done. That needed to be done because no one knew about it and no one understood it. And now we know what it is. I always like to think about it like illness diagnosis. Like if you go into a doctor and you're not feeling well, and let's just say, God forbid you have stage 4 cancer, then you don't want them to say, oh, you have stage 1. I don't want to freak you out. You want them to tell you what's going on so you can address it. And that was the big argument I always had with environmental messaging is like, I'm not worried about frightening people. You need to give people the truth as much as you understand it, right? And then let them figure, do what they want to do with the information, but don't manipulate it so that you get an outcome that you want them to have. You know, that's my, you know, you have to just say, hey, this is what the science, forget scientists' conclusions, just take the data that's coming in. And then you figure, you know, if you don't like what they're saying, then take the data and try to figure it out yourself. That, you know, now you can do that, right? Yeah. So that's kind of how I'm looking at it. Like, here's the data. The injection of carbon into the atmosphere is faster than the Permian mass extinction, which is insane. Look it up.
Yeah.
And so what do you want to do about it? We figured it out. We can take it out of the sky. We can make materials. We can put it in the ground. What do you want to do?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying in Legion. And that's what everyone's saying in Legion, but, and they're coming from all over the world, which I love. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So you get on all the different continents, like insights from
pretty much. I mean, we have Oman, which is fascinating because they have a mountain range that actually naturally captures carbon that rock is out in the, above the surface. Usually it's underground, but it can do it. And so they're speeding it up there. You've got St. Vincent and the Grenadines doing sargassum removals with these very thick mats of seaweed. You have Kenya, which is fascinating because the Rift Valley, which is ostensibly where humans came from, they call the gift of the rift.
So back to the roots.
Basically, going back to the roots, you know, they've got a lot of volcanic activity. It's where the plates are coming apart. There's a lot of storage underground. There's geothermal. So that probably will be a huge director capture hub because they have all the right geologic setup. They have the right geologic setup to do it. So we start the movie in Kenya, which I love because you usually start climate movies in the ice somewhere.
to shock right away.
Yeah. I think I know every iceberg stock footage, every iceberg.
Antarctica,
like, it's so funny because like from early days, you know, I see some people cutting montages now. I'm like, I've used that shot like in 2010, but anyway, I don't mind aging myself, but yeah. So.
Well, that was the ice changing, so you can still get new footage from that.
Yeah.
Where can I, well, we talked about it already, but how can I follow the whole Legion 44 movement? Let's call it that.
So Legion44.world, please join. So Legion44.world. And we have a join area where you can basically join in. We are going to have a lot you can do. You can basically join one of the companies. You can have a screening. We're going to eventually have removals that you can do. Right now, you're going to be able to do removals by watching the movie, and you'll have removals done by Climeworks. So we'll have a lot going on. Like I said, we just finished the movie in September. So usually it's 18 months, where at the 18-month mark is when we're at peak movement in terms of all the offerings. Mm-hmm. And then it goes on for 10 years. So it's a long road. We're at the very beginning of this process.
And it's a win-win-win road. I mean,
I think so. I don't know what the downside is, to be honest. In this case,
a no-brainer.
The thing is, too, the whole industry is very collaborative. Mm-hmm. So it's not only is it in the case, you'll see in the movie, but in the case of Brilliant Planet, which is so interesting. They have a lot of young engineers, but they also are making all sorts of materials mm-hmm. with the algae. So they're sequestering, but they're also making beta carotene and magnetic sand, which I guess is needed in industrial processes and probably many other things. With silicate, which does removals through enhanced rock weathering, they're helping the farmers, and Lithos does this too. They're helping the farmers so they don't have to use certain fertilizers, and they don't have to use, basically it takes the soil from acid to alkaline.
Yeah.
And on the East Coast of America, you have to basically lime your soil every 3 years. Now with
intense weather,
you don't have to do that anymore. Yeah. So it's free to the farmers, or the farmers can get the credit. Anyway, so there's a lot of win-wins. There's a lot of job creation. There's a lot of collaboration. There's a lot of cross-industry collaboration, which is also what kind of freaks out the paleo environmentalists, is when they see things like pipelines and I'm not talking pipelines across large landscapes. I'm talking about pipeline in Iceland from the little, from the direct air capture machine to the little igloo where it goes underground. I mean, the pipe is only maybe, you know, half a kilometer or something. Like it's like right there, you know. When they see these industrial processes, it freaks them out and they don't like it. They want to see trees and blue carbon and all that. Me too. I did restoration stories for a long time. Message to the paleo environmentalists, we're not going to get there with only that. We need that, of course, but we also need additional removals.
We need everyone.
We need it. Sadly, but we need it. And if we wait, it's not going to be ready in time. So I'm here to say we need to invest in it now so that it's there to help us remove the injection that we did that is so extreme. Yeah.
To sum up, a quote from Ice on Fire, is it game over or is it game on?
Oh, obviously it's game on. Because look, if it's game over, why are we sitting here? I think, again, if we can get away from what I've lived through, which is this polarizing, you're bad, we're good kind of conversation, that doesn't help. That is no longer where we're headed. Yeah. And by the way, guys, we're going to have to work with the fossil fuel industry. I know everyone wants them to just disappear. They're not going to go anywhere. There's trillions of dollars of investment in these structures. So we have to figure out how to utilize what they know to remove what we've done, And so that's, I think, what the Trump event really is about, is, this is the new world where we have to deal with everyone on the planet, every side of the aisle. You can't just imagine a world where it's all, flowers and windmills, and windmills have issues too, So maybe there's some other way we can make energy. I'm looking at like some crazy cool biochar to electricity, not just what Marcel's doing with Syncraft, but like another way that the energy can run through the char itself. It's fascinating. So there's a lot coming. Yeah. It's absolutely game on. And there's a lot
for everyone.
There. Yeah.
So you can come from any side, you can come from any place.
Yes.
There's a lot to do.
I think so. Yeah.
So join the Legion 44 movement.
Join the Legion. Come on. Let's do it.
Leila, thank you very much for joining this podcast. And farewell to all the neighbors listening.
Thank you, everyone who's listening. And do something wonderful today.
Anything.
Anything. That's wonderful. Okay.
And watch Legion 44.
Yeah, when it comes out.
Thank you, Leila.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Everything changes every which way.
Climate Neighbors is produced by Beyond Content GmbH. The guest in this episode was Leila Connors. Podcast editing and moderation by Michael Schindler. The intro was recorded by Lucas Herbert. We look forward to your feedback. Thank you for listening, and keep reminding yourself you have an impact on your neighborhood.